Manja Matic is like, hold me back. I'll see you out there.
To be honest, Onana's comment was grand, but like Matic took it to a whole new level completely.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skell and Paul Murphy.
We're now on. And Will O'Callaghan is now texting us saying, we're on. So you can save your analysis now. Well, it's big deer in the headlights moment. We are now without our father figure for the podcast. Two of us here. For anyone listening or even watching, two of us are just sitting in this room recording, and recording has just come up in the top left corner. Usually at this stage, Will O'Callaghan would be telling us we're recording and we'll give an introduction, but me and you aren't that type of person, Scott. I would think it's
there. I just feel like a child. You know how they get the lunch made for them? They get brought to school. They get taught everything. They get picked up for dinner made for them.
This is exactly it.
No parents, right? No teachers. Yeah. What do we do?
Well, that's exactly it. Because suddenly it dawned on me about... So we're recording this now at 7 o'clock this evening. It dawned on me about 5 o'clock. It's like, we arrive on and Will has the roundup of all the games of the weekend. Granted, we've watched them or we've seen it and we know everything about it. All the scores, what's coming up, where that leaves people in the tables, a well-rounded introduction, and then a nice little question to ask Skell, how's his weekend or whatever. And I realised none of that is now going to happen. And it's just the two of us. And what did you say? It's like before we came on here, it was like John Travolta. Was it in Pulp Fiction?
Yeah, so I like the film Pulp Fiction, but there's a scene, there's the meme where Vincent Vega, right? He's in the room, and he's just kind of looking left, and he looks right. Where am I?
Where am I? What am I doing?
That's what I feel like now.
Oh, geez, yeah. But for anyone, obviously, who didn't see social media over the weekend, we are without Will for this podcast anyway, but we don't know, will we be without him for another one? We're not sure. We'll wait for updates. But yeah, so Will is just a bit sick at the moment, a little bit under the weather, not feeling the best. So we're at the helm. The best way to compare it is, Skell, I think you put up a tweet of Don't Believe, but was there earlier to say that.
It's usually fairly accurate. If something comes to my head immediately... Relatively immediately, right? That means it's the most accurate, you know, description of the situation. So what came up to me was the Garda in Don't Believe was the two boys.
Yeah,
you came to that. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
And the real dumbfounded look on their faces. So I had to put it up on Twitter and I was like, that's just a perfect synopsis of where we're at right now.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we are a little bit deer in the headlights. But sure, look it. We'll get through it anyway. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing that there was one game this weekend. It's probably good because in one way, it's only one thing to focus on. But another weekend, if there was five or six games, sure, you wouldn't even have to think about it. It'd just be a case that you're into the games, off you go. But the thing is, you probably miss points. That's the other side of it. But the one game we had at the weekend, Waterford and Limerick. Limerick finishing up 28 points, 22 winners over Waterford in Welsh Park as well. And probably one of the points to touch on in the next while. I don't know, is it a place to start, but Peter Queeley just made the point. Before we get on to the game, Peter Queeley made the point, but I thought he made it quite well. Like, he was very humble about it, just saying that, you know, that's Waterford's two games in Welsh Park done now, 6 days apart. He was just saying that they spent 7 months preparing for Clare first round, get off to a good start, as they did, get off to a good start. But then a six-day turnaround. No, I agree with him in the way that he phrased it. Like, I mean, he was saying, look, Limerick were the better team, and they were. But it isn't easy at the same time just turn around and go, well, 6 days now to prepare for the best team of this generation. And some people would say the best team of all time. 6 days to turn around for them. And like, in fairness as well, for me, it was definitely a Limerick that we haven't seen so far this year. Now, that's not anything Waterford can prepare for. But Waterford now go on the road. Look, having missed the first weekend, they suddenly now two games very close together and are now away from home for the rest of the championship. So it is a tough enough one. But I don't know, like... The six-day turnaround, that's just something you have to get on with because, you know, all the teams across the provinces invariably depended on your fixtures. That may or may not happen to you. So I don't think, you know, he had much complaint over that. But in fairness to him, I do understand this point that, you know, your home games are now suddenly over and you're now heading out into Munster, a very competitive Munster, as we see. Like, after two games now, we have Cork on 3 points, Limerick on 3, Waterford on 2, Clare and Tipperary both on 1, which is the game next weekend, which kind of tees it up nicely. But like, I don't know, in fairness to him, he said that maybe it's something they can look at in future. And I think it is something that maybe the Munster Council will look at and go, or the GA, I'm not sure who decides the fixtures that way, will look at and say, right, well, we should organise it better. But I don't know, like, what's your view in terms of...
I always think the Murphys is a sweet spot in it. Like, I don't like having too much of a gap between games. Like, anything beyond 3 weeks, 3 weeks or more worries me a bit, you know. Anything less than a week then gives me the same kind of worry. Mm. And I suppose when you look at a championship as you know, as aggressive and as physical and as intense as the Munster Championship, you want as much break as you can. And you'd say to yourself, well, a sweet spot will be every 2 weeks. But that's not the nature of it when you've only got a five-team championship. It's perfectly doable in Leinster, of course, because you've got even draws.
Yeah.
But like we've seen over the last number of years since this kind of round-robin championship came in, that plenty of teams have been caught in tricky situations. And it's just the nature of the draw. It's just the way this championship works out because of the five-team situation. It has to correlate in with the Leinster Championship.
Yeah.
So you've got off weeks, on weeks. And like you said, Waterford, but in the same breath, I know Peter Quigley touched on the 6-day turnaround, and it is unfortunate that both their home games came within a calendar week, right? But in the same breath, he could be in a situation whereby Tipperary play Clare. And let's just say Clare beat them. Mm. Tipperary have got 1 point coming into a game of Waterford. That might be too bad of a situation. Now you're in a head-to-head situation as well. And if you can come away with 2 points from Tipperary, it's a do-or-die test in against, who's the last game? Cork.
Yeah.
I mean, so there are somewhat semi-silver linings in these kind of situations, but I don't think any team has a better draw over the other.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm trying to say? So like I do think the 6 days is rotten, to be honest, because we spoke about last week about your big players, especially the men in this world who have hip injuries and carrying legacy injuries, that I can't see a situation how they recover fast and then get back up again for a game coming down the tracks with the best team in the championship, as far as we can see. And today, look, I know that we're bank holiday Monday, but what Limerick showed recently, jeez, it was awful.
Yeah.
It looked like not even the Limerick of old, but Limerick of, you know, I'll say 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm.
When they were seriously at their pomp and they were kind of somewhat unbeatable, because the slickness was there, the pace was there, power, the tackling, every kind of characteristic that we'd associate with the Limerick team was back.
Yeah, it was. And like, one of the things I noticed, the first 15 minutes, in fairness, Waterford were going at them, but like Limerick's ability to, like, we always associate it with Limerick, but it's just been a bit disjointed, certainly in the league, and maybe just hit and miss last year to a certain extent. But their kind of fluidity in passing, I just thought the other day, was so, it was top notch. Like, some of the passes, some of the link-up play was unreal. Like, one of the points I thought about in the first half was Tom Morrissey's, you might remember this now, maybe you do, but about 15 minutes, Morrissey got a ball and he popped it to Keane Lynch. A lot of the players were drifting across the field from the centre-back position towards the number seven position because they expected Tom Morrissey was going to pop the ball out to wing back or wing forward, let's say. And then he just, a flat pass straight through to Keane Lynch, who had just drifted off his marker, popped it over the bar. It was all these kind of small ones where they were moving it around Waterford so well. And I think after 15 minutes, I had a score there. I think it was 7-2 up. 11 minutes gone, and they were 7-2 up. And like already they were showing that, okay, you can... We're not even waiting for the 50th minute for you to maybe wilt a small bit with energy. Like Limerick were bringing just a huge intensity. We spoke last week then as well of who was going to play centre back. Kyle Hayes goes in centre back. And like, I think me and you agreed on it that both of us would like to see Kyle Hayes at number seven running. But sure, what happens then is Barry Nash goes out to number seven, pops up at 2 points to play, missed another one in terms of he was creating chances, but he was outstanding and not even really spoken about a whole lot because there were so many other stories kind of going on the pitch, like the top scorer from play, Shane O'Brien, 4 points, Gillan, 9 points, 3 from play, I think his last one over by the sideline, outstanding, Keane Lynch got a match. So there were so many kind of parts there that the whole prospect of moving Kyle Hayes into centre-back went unnoticed. And like Darryl Dunn came on. And another talking point, not to go on with too many points, but they were even able, like Dermot Burns, the ability to take off Dermot Burns after, was about 15, 18 minutes, 80 minutes, I think it was, just because they were saying, well, one yellow card, another two fouls had been committed, one of them potentially a second yellow. And who do you bring on? Colin Coughlin. Like, so all those elements there, like it was a hugely impressive performance, despite the fact that, you know, 6 points is not a beating in hurling. It's comprehensive, but it's not a beating. But I think the manner in which they went about it, like the what was going on the sideline in terms of, right, let's take Burns off, even though he's playing really well. We have lads on the bench. Let's not risk a red card. Pop him on. I just thought there were so many aspects there to look at the Limerick performance to say, yeah, this is a big step up. This was kind of, I think, for a lot of us, the marker we were waiting for, to say that, okay, they're back here now. They're okay. Like, I don't know. Did you feel
they're different? So when I started looking at it, when Limerick are kind of playing this fashion, and the fashion, what I mean by that is when they make things look so simple, and the players are very high energy. So it's a great teams who make difficult things look easy. I think we can agree on that, I could say.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at it, and all the players, when you put Barry Nash to 7 and put Kyle Hazen to 6 and put Lynch wherever you want to put him 11, and you know, they can all perform admirably, because I just think the team kind of principle of play is so good. And I picked out two scores that were kind of carbon copies of each other to a degree. So like Barry Nash's point, for example, Murph, right? Nicky has a puck out. It takes 16 seconds for Nicky to puck the ball and it goes over the bar. But the way in which the ball was taken, I was just like, there's three things that happened here. Number one is the half-forward line movement has been exceptional. They play with an element of freedom and not too much structure. So in that point, what happens here is Nicky pucks the ball to Tom Morrissey. So Tom Morrissey situates himself on the 12 wing, right? Tom Morrissey then passes to Hegarty, the other wing forward. Along the same wing, Hegarty then passes to Nash, who was passed out. But the principle here is the two wing forwards ended up in the same wing, and then Nash was a forward runner. So it doesn't matter who was in that position, it would be Nash. Yeah. Someone was going to pass out the two lads for a forward pass, right? Next score, and this is the next one. So this is the one that Adam English got. So David Reedy gets the ball, passes to Lynch. He gets passed out by Adam English, a midfielder. So my point is, the person who's scoring is passing out lines that he shouldn't be in, theoretically, and then gets a score. That just shows a level of coaching and kind of game plan, game model that is so far above everybody else. Because if you look at the manner in which Watford had to go get their scores, it was difficult. It was under serious harassment.
Yeah.
It was a lot of freeze, don't get me wrong. But it just seemed so, you know, difficult for them to go and get a score. And then he gets scores like Jesse Hutchinson's ones and Jimmy Barnes one off the sideline. You know, they're real difficult ones that are so hard to get. Whereas you look at the way Limerick play and you're saying, how are they getting in such a position where Shane O'Brien can just get the ball, pick it up, turn, but it's everything that goes on. They're like a fight, it's just a fine clock the way it ticks.
Yeah.
You know? And I was thinking, like, how would you implement that type of game plan to a team? It wouldn't take months. It would take probably years.
And like,
when the lads got, when Kylie and Knurk got this team back in, was it 16 or 17? I can't really remember. It takes time to implement this kind of game plan and to get on this level of, I would say nearly flipping telepathy, because they're all the same. They know exactly what's happening, you know, and David Reedy's interview after was really, you know, informative. He said, you have to go forward. Lateral stuff is very, very slow. And it's rarely, you see them doing lateral stuff unless it's a necessity. They're always going forward and they always have runners coming off the shoulders, which requires a serious amount of energy. So if you're an opposition player, you're saying, right, where am I going to attack Limerick? Well, you can't attack them on your own puck out because they're excellent on it. Your puck out, then let's say the Limerick puck out, they move so well from numbers 8 through 12. You can't mark space on the man. Fantastic, you know. And then you're saying in open play, they hound you. And their players have such quality and they do the basics so well, it's very hard to identify a particular weakness. You say, right, that's where we're going after Limerick. And I think that's where the Cork game plan came from last year, where they just, in essence, they hoofed it, Murph.
Hoofed
it down the middle, and they tried to get to kind of an unbroken, unstructured play where they could try and get some sort of an advantage of. But that's what it was. It was unstructured. Whereas if you go over the structures kind of attack against Limerick, I think they just figure it out in 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, I mean, if you go with, like, a lot of people, well, there's a lot of teams they talk about, and in fairness, it's understandable. Like, Limerick can set the bar in terms of standards, in terms of play, different things. So, okay, like, a lot of club teams and different things that won't be playing Limerick are obviously trying to take what they can from that, implement it into their own game. But if you're trying to, like, beat Limerick at their own game, and I'm not saying Watford were doing this by any means, like, Watford have their own style of play, but probably what you're mentioning there is just the fact that you can't take them on at their own game. And probably what Cork did last year is, like, they had a circuit breaker in where that long ball down on top of two big forwards, certainly in Connolly and Hayes, and then you have lads coming running off the shoulder as a kind of a, okay, well, we're not going to try and run through you the whole time. In fairness to Cork, they were able to move the ball around. But if you think of his name has actually gone for me now. Centre forward, I'm after blocking this with Shane Kingston.
Darragh Fitzgibbon, is it?
Darragh Fitzgibbon. Darragh Fitzgibbon's point, you know, when he scored up a right half forward, running into right corner forward in the second half last year, where I think Kyle Hayes had just scored a point. And next thing, he just ran into the space because he was saying, well, let's not play through them now. They're all pushed up because they've scored. Let's go along, run into that space that, in fairness, now has to be vacated by them because they're after pushing up. But again, another game plan that requires just absolutely, like, enormous intensity. And one of the things that I took from what you were saying there, and I'd agree with you, is, let's say, like, with that point, with Barry Nash's point, where it was, was it Morrissey and Hegarty went over to that side? They were there. Like, a lot of teams, and like, speaking of my own club team, and I think a lot of club teams and even county teams would recognize this, where you're talking to lads, say, lads, you have to have a player off the shoulder. Limerick have, it's not even the player off the shoulder, it's the second player off the shoulder is most likely for them the man going to score. Like, so it's that thing of that, it, a lot of teams are playing kind of, not say two-dimensional, but in a sense, you have a ball winner, you have a lad running off the shoulder, trying to move the ball up the field, get a score. But Limerick have a ball winner, they have the lad they pop it to, and there's another fella going off the shoulder. Like, there's another layer to it that isn't just a simple case of, I'm marking my man. Do you know, I'm marking my man, that's it, done. It's the corner forwards of the opposition team nearly have to be watching the corner backs, because if the, like, them corner backs, I've often seen Mike Casey make a run up the field when no one's looking, I'm going to go and support this play. And they kind of have a free license to do it as well, which, you know, you're really handing that back to the players, I think, to say that, look, lads, you're smart enough. Like, yes, we have structures, we have different things, we have tactics and all that, but you also have to hurl instinctively. If you see I'm needed in such and such a place, off you go and support the play. And like, I suppose to touch on one of the points then, it was just, I suppose, inspirational. Gerard Hegarty got 1 point from play, but it was unbelievable. I was unreal. Like, the pickup, the just how deft it was that, like, there was a Waterford player coming running in and he just had the confidence to flick it through. And the way he did it, like, Colin Cochrane got the block, the way Hegarty flicked it into the hand, and then it's just this old Hegarty thing of, it's almost like a golf-like stroke where it's low. He hits it. He was striking that into the wind, if I'm right in saying that. I think the wind 70 was
yards. 70
yards on the move. And, like, it's nearly more favourable to be standing with your shoulder to the goal at that stage. But he just kind of, you know, while moving towards goal, like, lackadaisical, I would nearly call it stroke. It was incredible. Great.
Just not for a second. Now, do you think if he misses that, let's say, that wedge pick-up, right? Do you think John Kiley or Paul Kinnock would say a word to him?
I don't think so. No, I don't think he would.
I don't think they'd say a bit, to be honest, because I think that when they see players who are capable of this, they kind of champion that kind of skill to be executed. And so that's why I think that the point is very, and this is very important now, because I see an awful lot of underage teams specifically from like 20 years old down, and they play very robotic, very systematic, and they can't. There's a phrase that's always thrown out, I'm sure it's the same with Kilkenny, play what's in front of you. So you can have a game plan, of course, right? It could be up on the board in your sheet, but when that can get torn up within 10 minutes. So play what's in front of you. So when you see players like Barry Nash and Mike Casey taking off, they're just playing what's in front of them. They see green grass, they see an opportunity, so they're going to take it. Just like when Hegarty sees that little bit of a wedge pickup, he says, I can do this, bang, away he goes. And if it doesn't pull off, or let's say something breaks down, you won't hear a person on the sideline management giving out about this. You know,
they're
allowed to express themselves in a level of freedom that we see. Truthfully, we don't see with any other country team, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's coming into Cork now, to be fair. I do think it's coming into Cork. But in the same breath, I wouldn't right now. I just can't picture it now at the moment. Maybe I'm open to correction as the summer goes on. But I couldn't picture, you know, O'Donoghue or Leary taking off up the sideline. You know, I can picture Coleman taking off, right? You know, but I couldn't picture the lads just completely abandoning their post, you know what I mean, to their defensive post to go shooting. I can see their forwards moving with a great array of movement, but it just gets the sense that Limerick are just kind of, they utilize every skill they have and they're told, go do it without, there'll be no repercussion if it doesn't come off.
Yes,
you're tempted. So they're judged kind of, they're judged on intention as opposed to action. So an awful lot of management coaches will judge you on your action as opposed to your intention. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is probably the wrong way to do it. So if that doesn't come off that flick, you'd nearly be getting taken off. You know what I mean? You'd have some selector warning you not to do it, right?
But yeah.
I'm saying, go for it. Like, and they've reached that level of, you know, not giving a shit what anyone thinks, just play within themselves, beyond themselves even, that they can execute whatever skill they feel like they're in the backyard or the child at home.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's a very hard place to get to.
It is, yeah. But there's an element of sports psychology in it where I think, like, remember a few years ago, I always remember there's a great clip of Liam Sheedy. And I think it was, you know, it might have been Bubbles Dwyer, let's say, and Seamus Callanan. I think the game was in the Gaelic grounds. It was during, I'm going to say it was around 2019, 2020. But there was a case where
I know it.
They came over during the water break or something, and he gave one of them a pat in the back and he gave the other one a dig in the ribs, where it was a case
he put the arm around Bubbles, didn't he?
If something like that.
And he turned around and he boxed Kendall in the stomach.
And it's knowing that man management of, like, with Gerard Hegarty doing that, I think Gerard Hegarty, he's like an Eric Cantona type player in that he's just, like, capable of anything in the moment in terms of inspirational, great bit of skill. I think very, not to say confidence-based player, but very much believes in himself. And I think if you were to go out with, like, Gerard Hegarty, and I don't know the man, like, so I'm speculating here, but if you were to tell him, inhibit him by saying, You're not to do that. You're not to do this. You're not to do that. Then you don't see goals like he scored in the 2023 final, I think it was, against Kilkenny. Remember that pickup in the first half? Picked it up. Like, that's similar to that pickup he did against Waterford. And I think if you're a manager and you see that type of, like, you don't, if you do that to your players, you don't get the type of score that Tony Kelly got, the goal he got in the final last year. You don't get that because the player now has it in their head. Well, I'll get punished for maybe attempting something with a bit of flair. Now, I completely get it if it's a full back trying to do that around the box when you want him to absolutely have the ball, cut it in half and take everyone with him because you just need to clear it. Fine. But if it's a case that, you know, you have particularly forwards, midfielders, if you have them trying a flick and it's like, it's not coming from a place of needlessness, it's not, it's necessity, you're popping it into the hand, it's the only way you can pick the ball up. If that didn't come off, I would still say, I can see what you're doing there. You know, you're the type of player that can do it. But it's a man management thing. I think that's a big part of it, where it's like, one player, yeah, you might need to tell him, listen, stop that now, stop the flicks. But another player, it's a case of, you're well able to
do. I think the player then would offer reassurance to the management by executing this in training. You know, so like, I don't think he was, I've often wondered how Seamus Flanagan and Aaron Glenn were allowed to shoot from the sidelines, you know, these crazy shots that you would recommend other players not to do it, but they're the ones that's always doing it, whereas others aren't. And it's obvious that it's in their locker. They are capable of doing this. So the likes of Connor and Kylie would champion that kind of attempt. Go for it. We've seen Seamus Flanagan over the shoulder, you know, from the 21, you're going, that's some score, but it's in his locker. It's just like Burns keeps shooting, even though there's days he has a number of wides. Colin Coughlin has now joined that bracket. Whereby he can shoot from distance. We don't see Hayes shoot from distance. We don't see Willardon who shoot from distance.
No.
You know, because maybe it's not in their locker per se. They all have different strengths. You know, but whatever kind of skills these guys are able to execute at a very high level, they're told, go for it. You know, absolutely go for it. So if we shoot wide, for example, that's okay because we're deadly on the opposition puck out. Which is a huge skill itself. So it's okay. We can take 60 shots. We can take the ball back off you again.
Yeah.
You know, so to round this off, like, I think Limerick have reached a point, and we're only at the second championship game for themselves, whereby they're back. This well-oiled machine that we've seen in the past is now humming nicely. And they're a daunting task for anyone coming down the road.
They are. And like, the thing is, again, they're probably only going to get better. Like, one of the things we spoke about previously was just, not to say it was the confidence there. They have belief in themselves, but I suppose confidence is different. We just didn't see that bit of spark, that bit of flair that we saw even against Waterford. Swagger. We didn't see that through. It just wasn't. It wasn't there, wasn't it? Not
the swagger. We didn't see the swagger.
Yeah. We didn't see it.
You saw it in abundance, didn't you?
Yeah, we saw it in
abundance. Sorry, the last game you saw it in abundance. It's just they had this swagger, and it's not arrogance. That's not the word I'm looking for. It's a high level of confidence that they're executing to their plan. So they go out to execute at a very, very high level, and when things start moving, they just carry the swagger with them.
And
all these things then start happening. These lovely slick passes, these stick passes, like Keelan's pass to Adam English, looks so simple for his point.
Yeah.
No, but that's a moving target. That's a hard pass to give. And just like the pass by Morris Lynch as well. These little things that, again, they look easy on television, but great teams make the difficult things look simple. So that's where the swagger has come back. And when they get in that kind of form, they're a hard animal to stop. And who's next now for them? I think it's Cork in 2 weeks, is it?
I think so, yeah. Well, I did see Kylie talking about it afterwards. He was obviously trying to rally the support. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's a home game because they've played two away games, obviously.
Yeah.
So now they've a home venue. And as you know, Cork are travelling red nowadays, lads. The public in Cork see this is their great white hope for Ireland. It's been 20 years.
Yeah. Well, so I saw Jimmy Barry Murphy during the week speaking about it. Yeah, he was saying that he believes that Cork, and like, to be fair to the Cork supporters, and we'll obviously get back to Waterford now in a second. We're not going to leave them, but we were criticised last week about it 2 weeks ago. But like, I mean, even Jimmy Barry Murphy was saying that he believes, and sure, they have reason to believe, and they should, that, you know, they can, at least that they can go and win the All Ireland. But like, having seen the Limerick train now starting to get up and going, like, it is a moment where they'd say, okay, well, the speculation was there, were Limerick going to be the beast they were? Indications are saying they're going back to where they were. So it's something they'll have to reconcile with. But I think it's something they've reconciled with a long time ago, that in order to win in All-Ireland, they're going to have to beat Limerick at some stage. Well, they already have last year, but they'll have to do it again, most likely. But obviously in Waterford as well, like, if you look at the table now, big win last week against Clare. They're still on two, not to say they're still on 2 points, but they're on 2 points. Depending on results next weekend between Clare and Tipperary, it'll be interesting to see where Waterford will be after that. But like, where do you think this leaves Waterford now? Good performance, like good spread of scores, but obviously they just lack that bit of threat really in terms of Limerick. Like, where does this leave them now? Off the back of a very positive win against Clare, they're now, watching other teams going to play. They're now, I suppose, assessing their own setup. Will Austin Leeson be involved a bit more? Where do you think this leaves them after two games?
I think it leaves them in a tough spot. Yeah, this is being honest. Whereas last week there was a whole host of positivity because they took down a team that I didn't expect them to take down. Yeah. I think a lot of the general public would agree with me. I know we got lambasted by the Waterford public, for our assumptions, you could say, that Clare would top at Waterford. But as I said before, there was evidence to point towards it. You know what I mean, with the number of victories they had in the last X amount of years. But I just think it's the nature of the sport list and the nature of the Munster Championship. You could have such positivity, but 6 days later, that can be then your picture can be painted in an entirely different way. So now they've 2 points from four. Would you take two of those points at the start of the year out of those four? I'd say they probably would. Yeah, you're in with a shot now. You have a shot, right? And I think what I said earlier on about the Tipperary game, you know, like if I don't think it matters if Tipperary lose or win against Clare. To be fair, you just have to take care of Tipperary. So I don't think we're at the stage now where a lot of people are actually looking at, you know, what way our game's going to come. What's that word again, Murph? What's the word we are trying to guess the tables and guess results?
Forecasted?
No, what is the word?
Permutations?
Permutation, my friend. Come on. So I think it's too early after two games to be looking down the avenue of permutations. But like, simply put, go for Tipperary and beat them. You know, which is well within Waterford's capability. I personally think the bigger space pitch in Thurles would suit Waterford. You know, I think Walsh Park, yes, I heard the commentator said that like they're on about they want to make Walsh Park a fortress, but those tight parameters sometimes don't suit, you know, fast, agile forwards, in my opinion. Yeah. You know, they, like the Bull O'Brien is a big target man. I mean, Glenn can go high ball. So can Hegarty Morris. These lads can take high ball, they can take low ball. Waterford sometimes I feel need more space. They need more space around the middle to shoot from distance and more space against the Fitzgeralds, Hutchison, for Barron to run through, etc. So if you go into Thurles, you know, I think it's definitely within the locker to create more space, more opportunity, certainly for goals too, because they can use the legs and the agility they have. So like, I know what we're saying about the home games, and Peter Quigley makes a decent point, a relevant point, but they're not going to miss a beat as far as I'm concerned. Mm. You know, they're going to Thurles, which is a big, expansive pitch. And Thurles has been a good pitch to Waterford, as far as I'm concerned. You know, historically speaking, and I'm not big one for history now, but they've performed really well in Thurles, regardless of opposition. So I'm a glass half full when it comes to Waterford. Mm. I think they're in a good position. I think they're from where I thought they'd be 6 days ago to where they are now is 2 points extra, straight up.
Okay.
I thought they'd have 0 points coming into this game and that their championship would be semi-over at this stage. But now they have it all to fight for, because the Tipperary-Clare game, so much lies on that.
Yeah.
Even if it's a draw, right? Even if it's a draw, the Tipperary-Waterford game then comes to a head-to-head, doesn't it?
Yeah, as well, it does.
Who's getting third place? Like, because you'd imagine at the moment you think Limerick and Cork are going to see it through, right? But now you're looking at Clare and saying, right, just Clare of only 1 point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you get me? And now Tipperary and Clare obviously have a point each. And you're saying, just dead draw, it's all to play for, lads. And if one team wins, it's still all to play for. But the way, whatever happens here, I think if the best case scenario for Waterford at the moment is if Tipperary beat Clare, in my opinion. And Tipperary go on to 3 points again, and then Waterford come into town to Thurles and they beat Tipperary. Then they have it on the head to head. It's a great position. You're in a huge position then to go forward.
Yeah.
Because Clare will be only at 1 point. Tipperary will have three. You'll have them caught on the head to head. And then you're.
Yeah.
You know I mean, even so, a draw to win. So it's like you'll pass them out in four. And if you draw, you don't score difference. So I think it's a good position for them. And I know, lookers, you're obviously you're only as good as your last game. But the last game you came up against was a juggernaut.
Yeah, in fairness, like, I mean, it was impossible for them, not to say impossible for them, but the performance they put in against Clare, like, it was a top-class performance, and particularly in the second half, playing into the wind. Again, the wind isn't going to win or lose matches for you, but you have to adjust your game, and it's obviously a small bit more of an assistance if you use the wind well, but they hurled really well into the wind. But again, turning around, Stephen Bennett was the lad I was thinking of. We've mentioned him, this is the third week in a row we're mentioning him with his hips and with, you know, that recovery time. They're obviously very reliant on him. He got 9 points at the weekend as well, six frees, 265s. But, you know, I suppose it's just that spread of scores around the field. Like Billy Nolan got 2 points, Mark Fitz, Jamie Barron got 2 points as well. And then there was a spread of scores of 1 point each across the board from a few other players. But I suppose I agree with you. I do think that Semple Stadium will suit them. We always say this, and I know the debate happens every so often about the pitches being narrower. Like, Welsh Park is that small bit of a narrower field. It's not a huge amount in it. But I'd say it can feel fairly claustrophobic when you're playing against Limerick and you think, well, we're going to get right up tight against these lads. And then suddenly they're playing through you and you're chasing shadows at certain stages and you're kind of clinging to hold on. It's, you know, it's...
I know from playing there, but not across yet. When I was playing in Walsh Park and I had a puck out, and let's say Walsh were going well or we were going well, it was very hard to make space from a puck out. Very hard to make, even to make space in open play, especially on the middle. So if you look at the two games, so the Clare game, it was very, very open in the middle, wasn't it? From positions 5 through 12, both sides, it was very open. We didn't see the Clare, you know, tightness as we usually were accustomed to in that area. Waterford had opportunities to shoot from distance, whereas the Limerick was the complete opposite. It was extremely tight in the middle. Limerick played around them. Thurles gives you the opportunity to do the opposite. Thurles gives you the opportunity to play tight if you want, play expansive. Like, you've got options there, because even if the parameters or the dimensions of the pitch are the same, some pitches just play short. They play narrow. Yeah. They play tight. Yeah. That's just it. Like, you know, it's like, I would say QC Park, I would say Walsh Park, I would say QC Park and Mullingar. Those pitches play tight. They just do. Pitches that think they play expansive would be obviously Porkycweave, Crow Park, you know, even Limerick does, Thurles does, Nolan Park does, as far as I'm concerned. You know, so those pitches, Parnell Park's on the tight pitch, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
So those pitches that play tight and play wide, even though the dimensions might be the same, which sounds ludicrous. Don't get me wrong, it does. It sounds ludicrous. But trust me, as a player, you feel it more, don't you? This plays tight.
You do, absolutely. Yeah. No, it does. Like, it feels, and I don't know whether that's, we often talk about this, I don't know whether that's because of the stand or whatever it is, the way that they are so close to the pitch. Like, when I think of even Tullamore, for example, another one, Netwatch Cullen Park, like, there's a wall literally just at the sideline there. And I know people will say, well, Thurles has a wall, Nolan Park has a wall, Crow Park has a wall. But there's something about the way that they impose it onto the pitch. The stand is, it feels it's imposed onto the field. So when a player hits the sideline, it doesn't feel like they're a million miles away, or do you know what I mean? Like, isn't it just feels that it's appetizer. Like in the Gaelic grounds, for example, when you're out at the far side where the, let's say, the open sided stand is, like, that's no further from the field than, let's say, the pitch with the stand in Parnell Park. Let's say if we pick that side, the walls there are no further apart. But because there's no roof on it, because there's whatever, when a player's out there, it actually feels like it's a safe shot to puck a ball out to. Like, if I'm standing out there and Owen Murphy's looking out at me, it feels like it's safe, but it feels congested when you're in Parnell Park. Welsh Park in particular as well, the crowd are in top of you as well. So exactly as you said, there's very small margins in it, but they do play differently, which is, like, Thurles feels big, feels wide, feels open. So I do think it does, it leads to that feeling for players that there's that bit more space to maybe execute a game plan, to maybe move around, that they have more space to play in. So I know, I do think it will suit Waterford. And like you said, Thurles is that ground where I don't think any team in Munster is afraid of going there, because it's kind of like a second home from home, really, you know?
So everyone has played there so often. If you go, even start from schools to underage, like, it's the premier venue. Okay, obviously Porkycweave got developed in the last number of years, but prior to that, Thurles was always the premier venue for the last 20 years more.
Yeah.
So every big underage game, big, let's say, minor under 20s game or 21 back in the day, and senior games have been in Thurles. So it's not a venue that you'd necessarily, I don't even want to use the word fear, but everyone has grown accustomed to playing that pitch on numerous occasions. Like, well, you and I together, I can't count how many times we've played there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's not as if it's a very, you know, intimidating or invasive kind of pitch. It's not fucking Galatasaray, like. So it's just, we've all played there, and it's fine. And, like, you know, I'm just wondering.
What a goal. It's not fucking Galatasaray. Well, because so many hurlers have hurled against Galatasaray.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean? The venue, like.
No, I know.
So I think it can suit
Waterford. Turkish lads setting off flares in the stand.
There's none of that. Back in the day. I miss the foghorns too, actually. Do you remember them foghorns? Back in the mid-90s.
The gas ones, yeah. They're
the ones you should go, they're ones like.
a great impression over there. I remember you were allowed to bring him in at one stage, and it was grand. And then they came to stage where they were banned. I remember lads used to bring him in Pringles cans. But I think it's now, it's now almost the case where, depending, like, you might get away with it in Cusick Park when it's packed and you're stuck 10 lads deep and a mayor can't get you to haul you out. But in Crow Park, you probably can't get away with it as much as more. But sure, even, the air horns, used to be some noise with them. But I don't know, there must be lads not selling them on the street anymore or something.
Air horns and flags. I just remember back in the mid-90s looking at them games. Yeah. I was just like, geez, that would be deadly to be part of that.
Well, if you look back at, like, the games, let's say, you know, just pick a random game. I have these images in my head of, like, Offaly and Wexford back in the 90s, or Clare and Tip down in Thurles or whatever, and they'd go around by the terrace, and there'd be flags up on the amount of flags that'd be up there. It's not as much anymore, but it's still to say that there's an enormous, like, the terraces are obviously always, I know we're on a tangent here, but the terraces are always, like, you know, when you do, particularly when you do the march around the field, the terraces are always the most rambunctious, we'll call it, or the most rowdy crowd when you get up there. Like, there'd be flares, there'd be lads holding off,
oh, yeah,
off flares until you get up there. because they wanted, like, well, I'm not going to let the flare off when they're down the canal end. I'll wait till I get up to Hill 16.
But sure, you know yourself now, Murph. It's a rarity now. You'll see a family going to the hill, like.
Yeah.
You'll see six lads from Dainsford, under-21 team, heading off on the bus for the day. Couple of old teenies there, actually, they're well happy when they get into the match.
Well, that's part of it, because not only is it the best crack, but it's kind of like, what ticket is going to save me more money so I can probably get another pint down the pub before I go in? So that's exactly 90% of it. But Ash, there's the crack of going up there as well. Like, I mean, you're not going to be going into the stand and like that, landing in beside the family, and you're after having pints.
Come here. If there's something you could bring back from the old days, right? What, do you know, the old kind of, that was kind of synonymous with the games back then, what would it be? I have one thing in my head I'd love to bring
back. Well, you go with yours. I want to come into my head.
Do you remember when your team scored a pint or a goal and there'd be a heap of lads of varying sizes, children inclusive, on the inline, and they're running around the pitch.
I'd love to bring it back. Do you know the All Ireland goal? Yeah, like a lad sitting there with a Jack Russell Terrier on the end line, and he's like, do you know the way, if you ever go back and look at any of those All Ireland goals, and you have like TG Cahir or whatever, and it's like Jimmy Barry Murphy scores a goal, or Seamus Darby scores a goal or something, and suddenly, like that, group of random lads who are like sitting on the sideline, invariably a fella in a jacket, holding a hurl, fagging in his mouth, and like a terrier or something beside him, could run in and start celebrating with him, and then runs off the field.
Yeah.
Like that could, or even like go back even 20 years before that. Do you know where you see the ones where there's like the camera would pan out and there's like 10 lads sitting on top of the stand? No, like they're sitting on top of the nally end, the nally stand that used to be there. You'd see lads sitting up on top of that. No, not that you're encouraging it, but like, geez, that was crazy back in the day.
But dude, it was class though.
Yeah.
Now, you don't bring it nowadays. Like, I couldn't do that now. Jeez, imagine level 10 points deep and up on top of the stand.
I couldn't do it. I can't remember what Tommy's answer was to this, but we spoke about that one time, just asking. I was never on a field for an invasion. So like the last hurling, I can't remember the last hurling All-Ireland invasion. Like, I mean, 2013 didn't even have it for Clare. It's before 2011, as far as I know anyway. But I can't remember did Tommy say he liked it or he didn't like it. Because the thing is that when the invasions happened, the players couldn't get to each other. So let's say when you're celebrating on the field, you just won the All-Ireland and you're running to each other trying to celebrate. The boys are like, you don't get to each other because there's people on the field now and everyone's getting tagged. Everyone's wearing a Kilkenny jersey or a Cork jersey or Tipperary jersey. So you can't get to the players and you only kind of get to them at the lifting of the cup. Now, it's great and all, and it makes for a great scene, and it's great to celebrate with the supporters. But I can't remember. It's actually something like it'd be interesting to ask a few of the older lads.
I think the last time that happened, I'm going to hazard a guess here now. I'm going to say it's 2005 at Cork. Sean O'Gahalpin gave his peach in Irish.
I was on the field in 2006 as a supporter when Kilkenny beat Cork.
Was that an invasion?
Yeah, that was plan B. That was a plan B.
Plan B.
As it came in. The only other one I was going to say there that, it's not a good one. It's not as good as your one with the pitch invasions. But remember years ago, you'd go to a game. And I remember, like, you know, you'd go down to Thurles, let's say Kilkenny are in the All-Ireland quarter-final or something, and they're playing Galway down in Thurles. And you'd go down there of a Saturday evening, and you'd have the two corner forwards would be a another. Do you remember that? Whereas, now people give out to go, oh, geez, they had Joe Canning down at centre-forward, and he's not. He's wearing 26, and Cathal Mannion is there. And, like, people give out about that now. I remember years ago, like, 97, 98, you go to a game, and they wouldn't even name two corner forwards.
Dina Ella. It was Dina Ella.
Another. But like you drive on, you get the program. There's three lads missing out of the program. And you're like, who's going to be playing here? Who's coming in? Who's starting? Like, what's the... So like, I completely understand that journalists get a bit frustrated when the jerseys change and all this stuff. But we've actually come on a fair bit from where it was in the 90s, where they weren't even naming lads.
We've come on a fair bit, he says.
It'd be interesting. Do you know what I'll do? Yeah, exactly. I'll do my best with O'Callaghan now, and I'll say that for any listeners who actually want to submit in the comments on YouTube and on Spotify and wherever else you get your Off the Ball podcast, what you would bring back. Because I'm sure there's definitely a few dingers out there now. I can't remember any of them.
I said we're definitely aligned that you've definitely taken up the mantle for Will. You're the more polished speaker, presenter type.
As I said in the group, as I said in the WhatsApp before it, I text in, and for anybody listening, like I text into the group and said, well, listen, I'm just writing down a few notes here from the weekend. Because like we said at the start, like Will just announces these things and we just arrive on like gone beans and he just said, this is what we're going to do. And brilliant, we don't have to think. But I was like, you're trying to get three girls to bed. there. So you're not going to, I'm not going to put the onus on you to come around and say, listen, Skell, you're probably training the under 20s today or whatever. And you're now hunting 20 cows or 100 cows into a shed. You're milking. In fairness, I had to do something and just take the burden off you.
Fair enough. Well, first things first, I'm trying to keep them alive, the three girls. Keep them alive.
Fair enough.
Keep them out of harm's way. One day's wrong today. Jesus Christ, turn your back.
Usher. Oh, Jesus Christ.
That happens. But come here. We'll go back to hurling, though, eh?
Exactly. And actually, to be honest, since we only had one game at the weekend, and I know we'll touch on it at the end, just about the under-20s. Or do you want to touch on it now, actually? Big weekend for the under-20s. And we'll probably... we're just going to preview the games next week then, obviously, straight away after this. But the under-20s, obviously, big weekend.
Like, it's a bit of a... kind of a surprise weekend in the sense that, obviously, we're recording on Bank Holiday Monday, and both the Leinster quarterfinals were played today. So, Laois were playing... excuse me, Wexford. And Dublin were playing Offaly. And if I'm being honest, I assumed Offaly would overcome Dublin and Wexford would overcome Laois. But it turned out to be the opposite, which is very, very surprising. But it just goes to show that it's the beauty of underage hurling or even the darkness. But Offaly, I think, in a sense, I think injuries caught up with them, to be honest. Mm. Like, they just didn't see themselves. Like last year, you know, they obviously won the Ireland. They were flying very, very high, very fast-paced, energetic team. This year, it didn't seem that way. You know, obviously their senior team was going well in the league. Probably took a bit of mileage out of their under-20s, a couple of injuries, etc. And now Dublin overtook them. So that, I think if I'm correct in saying that'll be Galway, Dublin, Leinster semi-final, and then Laois, Kilkenny on Wednesday week.
Okay.
So
and you said a small bit of it there. Like, do you think any of this kind of like a lot of those under-20 players are making the leap from minor 20, let's say, over the last few years into the senior grade? There's a lot of crossover there at the moment. I know, like, let's say the Offaly management probably won't say it's because of this or anything, but there surely has to be some kind of a little bit of, like, we see Screeny.
Oh, there is correlation. If you ask me, in my opinion, like, it happened to us last year ourselves in the sense that, you know, if you take the Offaly team, for example, because they're very well known, they're nationally known. When they started off at minor, it was kind of, I'll speak for myself for the minute. It was a surprise this team came along. You know, was contesting the Ireland final versus Chip, you know, and narrowly beaten, obviously, with last minute goal. But that team stuck together through that age group and they stuck together in the following year, from the 20, and the following year again. So what has happened in it, obviously, that team has now been, you know, raided because they've now become the best young players in Offaly. So they're going to be utilised for the number one team in Offaly, which is the senior team. And there's been probably a little bit of a disconnect whereby, you know, John Kenny's trying to keep things going for his senior team and contest, you know, 1B finals, then preparing for Leinster Championship, playing Leinster Championship. And with that comes... you know, it comes fatigue and injury. And like, nothing upsets the apple cart of a team like injury. So, unfortunately, when your best players probably go down with injury or fatigue or even, you know, legacy injuries. So, we saw, for example, Turgainen, big player for Offaly in the 20s. He was missing throughout for the year. Screeny, again, was out with this, I think I have the pronunciation correct, osteopubis, is that what you call it?
Yeah.
In the groin, yeah. And even today, he just didn't look right. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Didn't look right. And then Dan Ravenhill looked tired. So, there are three... they're the three biggest players, to be fair. You know, so when they kind of come in carrying fatigue or carrying injury, it's very hard for them then to become the dependable people at under 20 that we've grown accustomed to over the last year. So you can see how a team's kind of, you know, fluency just suffers. That's all it is, you know. And it happens to teams that have, let's say, 4, 5, 6. And in Offaly's case, I think it's 9 or 10 as their playing the senior team. So it's very hard to keep your under 20 team going at a very high level that you got used to last year whilst you're pushing your senior team.
Yeah.
But it's okay for the likes of Kinney, in my opinion. It's okay for Kinney, it's okay for Galway, Cork, because they just have numbers left. That's all it is. You know, they've multiple players that, you know, like for Galway's perspective, they've used one under 20 in the championship so far and used them kind of sparingly. Whereas Offaly have used numerous under 20s and used them heavily.
Yeah.
So it's just the nature of it. And unfortunately for them they got knocked out. So but again, look at on we go. Dublin were full value for the victory.
Well, they were, was it, 4-12 to 17 points. So in fairness, you know, it's a powerful victory. And credit to Dublin as well, to be fair to them. Laois beat Wexford as well. So, like, in fairness to them, like, you can look at Offaly and maybe say that, okay, there was overlap and so on, but it's not to detract either from, like, a great performance from Dublin.
No, you're right.
I suppose there's something as well that for us as hurling supporters, not that we want to see any team losing, but seeing Dublin win, it's great. You'd be hoping a few of these lads then will supplement the Dublin senior panel or go into the Dublin senior team over the next few years. So look, hopefully it's a few green shoots for Dublin as well. But I'm very aware, obviously, we've drifted away from Munster here at the moment. We only have games to preview next week. So obviously the big one before we get to Leinster of Clare and Tipperary, 8 o'clock, or sorry, not 8 o'clock, 6 o'clock on GA Plus in Cusick Park next week.
Yeah.
both teams on 1 point, two games played. It's hard to know going into this one now at the moment. Like, Clare, for after the Waterford performance, I suppose a big one for me anyway will be telling what lads will they have back from injury. Like, Dermot Ryan be back? Will Tony Kelly be back? Tony Kelly seemed to be just sick for the Waterford match. Yeah. So you'd imagine he'll be back in, which will be a big plus from Tipperary then. Like, again, it's going to be interesting to see. We didn't learn anything really from Tipperary in the Cork game, bar the fact that, I mean, the fairness, they rallied very well. Darren McCarthy will be missing this match. He only got a one-match suspension as well. He didn't get one-match suspension, so he got one. So he'll be missing this. But, like, I mean, 15-15, like, regardless, in fairness, Tipperary, you know, they will have lads come in off the bench and make an impact. But it's a tough one to call. Clare, if I'm looking at it at the moment, kind of part of me is going a little bit towards Tipperary on this one. It might seem a bit strange, I don't know, but we learned nothing from, like, Tipperary put in a savage performance against Limerick. And again, if we're only working off what we've seen, savage performance against Limerick, and unlucky not to come away with a win. Some people would say maybe lucky to come away with a win, or sorry, with a draw because the last minute free, whatever you may look at it, great performance. Mm-hmm. We only saw them really rally against Cork. Like, we didn't get to see a whole lot to see. Like, we were hoping 15-15 against Cork. Nobody could have predicted a lad being sent off straight away at the start of the game. So after that, you can't really drill into anything because they're on the back foot. But they did stay pushing against Cork, and that's something we spoke about. They stayed fighting. We said that Cork maybe dropped off the pace a small bit. But you'd imagine that Tipperary now will be pressing the reset going, look, that's disappointing, but bury it, put it in the past. Like, it's not a traditional loss, if I'm going to say that, for it. Like, they didn't go out 15-15,
right,
not perform. Do you know? So I think they're looking at this going, I think if anything as well, they're saying, look at lads, it's very, like, let this not be something where people go only for that loss and Darren McCarthy getting sent off. You know, we would have, I think Tipperary will go with this, say, lads, Clare at the moment, beaten by Waterford, fair and square down in Welsh Park. There's an opportunity here where potentially, if we start fast against Clare might be vulnerable to us turning them over in Ennis, which again, as you said kind of earlier, like, would benefit Waterford. Waterford then go and play Tipperary then as well. Yeah. Was I right? That's the permutation that would say, and they turn over Tipperary, that would suit them.
Well, I was saying, if the team you beat keeps getting bet, it's only good for yourself. So yeah, if Clare get beaten by Tipperary, in my opinion, that was good for Waterford, because now Clare have suffered, you know, a couple of losses, you could say. So then Chip go into the game with 3 points, you know, from three games. Waterford didn't have 2 points from two games. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so now they're heading into a situation where if they overtake Chip, they're in the driving seat, lad.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So that's what I was looking at. But, like, as the week went on, and we recorded last week, right, after, you know, but the week previous, the Clare and Cork game, I'm now finding myself putting a little bit of an asterisk beside Clare, because I can't look beside it and say, right, geez, you were 12 pounds down, lads. He fought back bravely, which we assumed they would do. We knew they'd fight, but there was a man down, and we see now what a man does when you have a numerical disadvantage, particularly in your forwards for your own puck out, how difficult it is to turn over a team. So when Shane Barrett got sent off, that's when Clare kicked into gear to a degree. And even with what we're saying, Murphy, was it like 5-6 minutes left? They were 8 points down. So their comeback is admirable. Yeah. It was fantastic. But I still can't get over the fact that they found themselves in that position. You know?
Yeah.
So I'm looking at this game going, I actually can't wait for this game. Because, like we said earlier, QC Park plays tight. Tipperary are going to have buckets of aggression. And I will say, like, you can have any game plan in the country for any sport. When you get a man sent off within, what, 15, 20 seconds? That game goes out the window. And when it's one of your forwards, it's very difficult, right? Because in your team, you know your opposition has a numerical advantage in the backs with their own puck out. It's very, very hard. But the way Chip fought, I saw something in it. I thought they were admirable. And even the lads who came in, they pushed hard, right?
Mm.
And I go back to the day when Tipperary played Cork in the league and Jake Morris spoke. Remember that? And he kept using the word pride for Tipperary. Yeah. That's just sticking with me. That's all it is. So I'm thinking Tip are going to go to Hughesy Park and they're going to go 100 miles an hour.
Mm.
And just whatever it is, the position I think the finals is in now is better than Clare. Now
it is.
Clare need people back to morph. They need lads back. They need Jim Ryan. They need a fit, able-bodied Jim Ryan. They need a fit, able-bodied, well, healthy Tony Kelly, as they do with Clare at the back. Once they have that, Clare are back into their original mode. But without those players, you've seen, and the lads who performed for them, they performed admirably, but not to the level that they did. Like Jim Ryan was a, you know, he was a nominal scorer every day for Clare. He could come away with a couple of points. So he was a shooter from distance, you know. Tony Kelly being in midfield allows Dave Fitzgerald to thrive. You know, allows Peter Duggan to thrive. And I know they're missing O'Donnell, etc. But Cleary as well, fullback. Say what you like about him, but he's an all-round winning fullback. tough unit to crack. So they need those guys back. If they have those guys back, you've got a fairly 50-50 game in your hands, I think.
Mm. And like, one of the points that I actually thought, and it kind of only thought about it afterwards, I don't think we mentioned it last week or the week before, or whatever it was, when we were talking about Clare and Cork. Last year, when Limerick were down by maybe, 8 or 9 points, up in Ennis, and they come back and they beat Clare. It was actually Richie Hogan made a point of saying that you can't keep doing that. You can't keep leaving yourself in that position and then, you know, resulting, hoping everything would work out for you. And not to say they were caught in the All-Ireland semi-final, but certainly maybe it was a hallmark of saying that it's not complacency or anything. It's just that you're not hitting the heights, and that if you're hoping that, okay, you let a team get a start in you. And I'm sure this is also the stuff that Brian Lowen is saying to Clare anyway. Saying, lads, we can't let teams get starts on us like this and then be trying to rally. That's where I'm looking at Clare at the moment, to say that Clare are an outstanding team. They have like generational hurlers in the team, in the panel. But as at the moment, as a group, you're looking at them to go, well, where are Tipperary? Where are Clare? Well, like, they're both on the same points at the moment, grand. But then when I look at the manner in which they got the points, I'm going, if, like, these are all fine margins. But if I was to look at one team or the other and say, well, who here do I think is getting more out of their panel than the other, I would say it's Tipperary at the moment. For me, but the thing is, like, and again, this is not a get out of jail free clause here. Like, next week, we could be sitting here and Clare could put in an absolutely mighty performance. Peter Duggan could play well. Tony Kelly could be back, you know, and they have, let's say, Dermot Ryan gets back as well. And suddenly, you know, Clare win by 5 points, 6 points. That completely can happen in the Munster Championship. Absolutely. But at the moment, when you're looking at it, you're going, well, Liam Cahill, for, let's say, the last 1 or 2 years where he's taken a bit of slack, he seems to now really have the team in a very hungry position. And I know a lot of people are talking at the moment of saying the tactics that are happening before the game and all these things. Like, yeah, absolutely, you can talk about that, saying that maybe the off-the-ball stuff isn't, you know, good, or maybe it's not part of the game. But it seems to me that Liam Cahill is very much in a position where he's saying, well, I'm doing what's necessary to have these boys revved up. Okay, maybe we didn't get it right the last day against Cork. We maybe overshot the runway. But the confidence is there in Tipperary. The belief is there. Like, if you go to Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and granted, man got sent off, but you were coming out the gate with aggression, we're going to get right up in these lads' faces, and the team aren't afraid to do it. I think they're going to go to Ennis and say, listen, lads, right, again, let's not go as far as getting someone sent off. But again, up in lads' faces, let's show them here that we're not going to be pushed around. And within that then, like, you know, you have your John McGrath hurling well, you have the likes of Alan Tynan hurling really well, Ronan Mars going really well, Connolly's going, like, there's loads of lads ticking there for them. So at the moment, I think that there is just potential here that they have enough to turn it over. And if they do, again, then you turn around and you say, well, Clare will be in a tough position then. Clare will obviously still be on 1 point. And then we're starting to get into the situation of it's the permutations, which are too far out now to figure out, but we're getting into those permutations. So look, I don't know. I think you were saying Tipperary as well, but for me this weekend, I'm going Tipperary marginally, like a 2 point win. I think that could just be it.
Yeah, I'm kind of taking the position that if Clare have their full complement, you know, I'm assuming they have Cleary, they have Ryan, they have Tony Kelly. I'm not assuming they have Shane Donald, right? But if they have their full complement at the moment, right, it's a different kind of Clare than we've seen, you know, 6-7 days ago against Waterford. Very different if you ask me. What was the Waterford's eight point loss? I do believe if you had Tony Kelly and Jimmy Ryan, you know, that 8 points would be far less. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
In this instance, right, I'm assuming both teams have a full complement, Bar Darren McCarthy. Yeah. And I'm very much like the same as you. How do people attain their points? In what manner do they attain points? And if they're defeated, what manner are they defeated? And I just think Tips run slightly more impressive. That's it. That's all it is. Like, and like, we're going after 2 games. The league is irrelevant, okay? We're just going after 2 games we saw in front of us. Tip came up against Limerick and Cork. Cork at home in their pomp and still said fighting. I can't get away from that point. I know I sound like a broken record, keep repeating it, but I was just so impressed with the way they fought. So I think that's coming again. So
yeah,
I'm giving a very, very narrow margin of victory to Tipperary as well. But I'm saying not without a huge Clare fight. Because this is their championship life on the line. So they're Ireland champions, you know, their chance of repeating is coming down to this type of game. You know, if they lose this game, it's virtually, you'd have to say, it's impossible for them to qualify, because they'd lose the head-to-head on Tipperary and they'd only have, what, 1 game left? You know what I mean? Against Limerick away.
Yeah.
I think it's Limerick away. Yeah, because it's the second home game, so it'd be Limerick away. So if they lose this game,
it's
very, very hard to see how they qualify. Very hard. I can't
it's a fair point.
So it's a do-or-die performance.
Yeah, It's for a neutral, it's great to have it at this stage, to be honest. Like, that's not, you're not wishing to condemn anyone, but you know that the games are coming down very serious. Like in Leinster, we'll look across Leinster now in a minute, but like in Leinster, we just don't have that cutthroat situation. Yeah. We have teams who are, you know, they have certain they have certain levels that they hope to get to this year and certain markers and different things like that. But essentially, like, we knew at the start of this year, like, a really good team is going to be eliminated early, not to say early enough, but they'll know their fate maybe after two or three games. Probably didn't expect it to be Clare. But again, if Clare win this game, you know, they're right back into it. Suddenly now you have Tipperary on 1 point, and now Tipperary at one. So, like, the margins in which this hinges on are very small. And to go back to a point that you made about Tony Kelly and Dermot Ryan, like, Waterford win by 8 points. And I know people will say, oh, are Tony Kelly and Dermot Ryan worth 8 points? What I would actually say is that the game just maps out differently if they're involved. Like, if you don't have the likes of Tony Kelly on the field, or let's say if you do have him on the field and you have Dermot Ryan, maybe Waterford don't develop that 3 point, 4 point lead. They might develop it at one stage, but they don't get it out to 8 points. It's not a simple case of, are they worth eight? The game, in terms of the psychology of it, never works differently, because maybe Waterford just don't bridge that gap because there's a few extra scores on the field that Tony Kelly is there. Dermot Ryan's also capable of scoring, but also there's a bit more of a shored up defence that, you know, a confident, I suppose, established defender like Dermot Ryan is there. So that gap never actually develops. So, like, if you do have those lads back next weekend, and I imagine the will of Tony Kelly, I think anyone who's available, because this game is so important, Clare will have them at the weekend. Yeah. But they are just a different beast. But look, it's going to be a huge game. Saturday night, 8 o'clock, six o'clock, GA Plus. Before we have...
Nicely done there, Murph. Nicely done, GA Plus.
GA Plus. Well, I just have it noted here. I said this because, in fairness, a lot of people want to know where the games are on. So Kilkenny and Offaly isn't on, isn't being televised at the weekend. Antrim Dublin is on GA Plus also. And Galway Wexford is on RTE. But Galway Wexford, see, this is a kind of ideal. Galway Wexford, as it looks at the moment, looks like it could be the tastier of the Leinster ones. Like, in terms of what competition could be there. Like, if Wexford muster a performance, again, we don't know what Galway, I'll let you talk about Galway now in a minute, what way Galway are set up.
You're right.
in terms of, that looks like it could be the one. And then we're straight into, which is unreal, like, which is brilliant, we're straight into Clare and Tipperary then at 6 o'clock. So you whet the appetite with one of the Leinster games, or Antrim Dublin, if you want to watch it on GAA+. And then we're straight into Clare and Tipperary. But I suppose to go with the first Leinster game that's on Saturday, 3:15 in Pearse Stadium, Galway Wexford. I'll let you first call on this as a Galway man.
As a Galway man, I'm stuck in a difficult position right now, because on one side of my mind, Murph, I have the performance against Kilkenny a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And on the other side of my mind, I have the performance against Offaly.
Yeah.
And the Offaly tactics, having watched the game back, to say relative highlights, you know, were questionable. So yes, it was a positive performance from Galway, and they did what had to be done with a nice margin of victory. We're missing Dahi. I still don't know which Galway will show up. That's been quite frank. And again, like, it's not. I'm not trying to even dampen down their chances or to go in this, like, you know, trying to be clever or to be cute. I just genuinely don't know what Galway will show up. That's the truth of it. You know, if we show up in the manner, let's say, the slickness that we had against Offaly, we beat Wexford.
Okay.
If we show up like against Kilkenny, we won't beat. But I just think that we have, how do you say it? We've been forewarned now, I say, that the way we performed against Kilkenny was not up to scratch.
Yeah.
That performance was our third performance, if you ask me, of the year that was below par in terms of, you know, tactical awareness, even the players' performance in terms of aggression, grit, you know, tackling, harrying, work rate, all those different type of characteristics I always see of a good team. They weren't on show, but they came against the Offaly team, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm saying, if we just continue that, and regardless of who you play, after a bad game, regardless of who you play, when you come away with a victory and a handsome victory, it only does good for the team. It gives you some positive momentum in the right direction. So I'm thinking the Wexford game is coming at the right time. It came with a couple of weeks break, and it's at home. And like, I'm not saying the pitch is a huge advantage. I'm just saying the travel is an advantage. It is. Yeah. It certainly is. When you go to Wexford or Waterford, or even Kilkenny to a degree, it does take a bit out of you. So like, when you can get up in your own bed in the morning, traveling only, let's say, half an hour, 40 minutes to Pearse Stadium, that kind of exertion is not taken out of you. That's a huge plus, if you ask me.
Mm.
So when you piece all the things together, I'm thinking this is pointing towards the Galway victory, but Wexford have to be hurting. They have got to be hurting with the way they performed against Dublin.
Yeah.
And like, what's I won't say worrisome, but the one area of concern would be the lead chin factor. He's extremely dangerous. And their puck out strategy just seems to be moving him from 10, 11, 12 and poking the ball on top of him. We've got to stop that man getting primary position because he's their nucleus, Murph. He's the guy that makes them tick. And if you can stop him, you go an awful long way. To be honest now, I'm not trying to be dismissive, but you go 90% of the way of beating Wexford.
Well, you would because, if you look at Wexford in quite a lot of the league games, they just didn't have that anchor in the forward line where you were thinking, I understand what you're saying there of when you're moving Chin across the line, he was their only man, but at least he was a man where you were going, okay, that's when I look back at, and you could nearly pick any team in the past, if you were going there when you were playing Dublin, you were saying, well, lads, these guys are going to look to get to Conal Keeney here, or they're going to look to get to Liam Rush or, whoever, Danny Sutcliffe. You look across the Galway, you knew what they were going to do, Tipperary, and so on. So at least, Chin, in fairness, you see him against Dublin, he does bring, he lifts their performance, and at least he is a figure there to target and to say, well, we might even throw him in full forward and lump one or two down. But the thing is, for me, Galway do have the players, the physical players. I'm thinking straight away of Fintan Burke. I'm thinking, if he's big enough, strong enough, but also as well, not too proud to go, listen, I'm not going to compete here. I'm going up, I'm going to block hard. No one Chin is going to, let's say, win one or two balls in the air. But if I can break those balls down and I have Tommy Monaghan or someone running in on the break, if I have, Cahill Mannion, whoever, that's fine. 100. I don't need to win this ball. I'm going to agree with you. It is a big platform where I think teams can get naive to maybe think that, Lee Chin winning the ball in the air isn't that huge. It's an enormous thing when you play against them, that he really is an anchor. And the thing is about him as well, once he lands with the ball, he's gone. He's so agile, he's so physical, he'll either get a score, which is worth nearly 2 points on the board for them, or pops it off and brings another player into the game. So I'd agree with you. I think it is an important one. I do think, in fairness, we didn't mention with the other, to a touch in one dimension, we mentioned it with Welsh Park, but the journey up to Pearce Stadium, it's not going to be a big thing, it's not going to be a defining thing, but there's a bit more of a easier preparation for Galway coming into this. You're at home, you're getting prepared in a field that you've played in several times. In terms of two teams who are maybe looking to just get a foothold and build, not to say build on the confidence, but you're looking to take anything you can at the moment that'll benefit you. And I think for that, Galway, good performance. In fairness, good performance against Offaly the last day. Started to look like that they got rid of a few of the bad habits they had against Kilkenny. I think they'll be really looking to this game to go, lads, we need to take another step. And at the bottom line is that if we perform really well over the next while and get back to a Leinster final, well, then we can banish the performance against Kilkenny to the ashes. We can just say, look, that's done and dusted. So that's, I think that's Galway's trajectory at the moment. But whether they get there or not is another thing.
I don't think so. Obviously, they're going to be targeting 2 points. But I'm just thinking, if I put myself in a player's shoe now, I'd be so disappointed with the way we played Kilkenny. And then with a positive performance against Offaly, I need to back it up. We need to back it up as a group, regardless of what the media think nationally, regardless of what the Galway hurling public think. Us as a group in here, the 50 people in our group, there are 35, 40 players in your backroom team. We've got to prove that we're serious about this. You know what I mean? Mm. So if they come to town now and they work, all I want to see them is just give them an honest endeavour of work. If they go hard at everything with full energy, I can take whatever happens after that.
Do you know what I mean? Go on, sorry.
What I'm saying, if you try your best to perform, your absolute best to perform and get beaten, I can take that, Murph.
Yeah.
But it's when you limp to loss drives me cracked. It drives me so soft. When there's a huge degree of separation between backs and forwards. You know, let's say the Kilkenny forwards got so much fucking space. None of our backs were yellow carded. You know what I mean? And I'm not trying to condone yellow card, but
I know what you mean.
It's a sign of intent, it's a sign of aggression, it's a sign of in your face marking. At least you're saying, right, we're up for it. And so if they come now on Saturday, and they're in your face intent, I can come away whatever result happens. And you're right about Fintan Burke. Fintan Burke is able to play the six positions in the backs. He's agile enough. He did it on Hegarty, I think, in 2022 or 23. I'm going to say 22 more, where he marked Hegarty for the whole day.
Yeah.
And cleaned him out. Yeah. That was the day I think Hegarty went down to score 1-5 and finally got man of the match, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So it's well within Fintan's locker that if he's given a specific role, mark that lad wherever he goes, wrestle him out of it, he's well able to do it. No problem.
And
he can sacrifice his go forward blade just to make sure the Chin doesn't get enough kind of traction to give Wexford a platform. That's crucially important.
That is, in fairness. And even thinking as a defender, I used to enjoy when, if you're given a job like that, if you're going out playing Wexford and Micheál Donoghue comes to you and says, listen, you're the man, you're going market. It's a huge compliment to you. Not that Fintan Burke needs a compliment or anything like that, but it is a huge compliment to a player. And he may go with someone else. Micheál Donoghue may look at this and say, well, actually, no, I'm going to send Dahi or whoever. Now, we probably have alluded to the fact that we think probably Fintan probably has, not to say he has a bit more legs at the moment. Would that be a fair statement to say that
he's a fair animal? We think Dahi's suspended.
Yeah.
We have Dahi suspended. You're like, who's got that bit of aerial prowess?
Yeah.
I won't say exceed Chin, but at least match him to a degree. And physically, Fintan's very powerful, Murph. He's a powerful man. You know what I mean? He's one of the few tradesmen in hurling nowadays, right?
What trade is he?
Electrician. So at least...
Make you stronger?
it's a softer trade. He's a bit of hardship.
I thought you were going to say, like, remember Kieran MacDonald did an interview a few years ago and he said he never did the gym because he was lumping bricks in and out of blocks. Kieran MacDonald?
When I did my student placement, I did it with Warden Brough.
We get out to this, but go on.
As an engineer, okay? And yeah. I was situated in Bannisloe in... I still remember, September 2007. Right, and the first person I see is Kieran MacDonald, okay, and his father Danny, and I was like, that's Kieran MacDonald, right? So, he used to box jump up out of the trench, no bullshit. He was a pipe player. They were laying service in the ground, right, and he wouldn't come up to the ladder. He'd box jump up out of it.
Yeah,
like, this guy's a machine, and then he'd be topless, like, wouldn't wear his vest or his hard hat. He used to break my heart, but he was a sound man. But point being, he was a hardy bastard, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And so whether the type of profession or not comes into it, but even just being on the sites and in and around him, you know, has its own difficulties, you could say, Murph, right? And fit is able for a bit of hardship, no last jump.
not to be disparaging to any electricians that they're not strong, but I'd say the plasters or someone would say, actually, no, I'm aiming at the teachers.
I'm aiming at the teachers, so definitely.
The teachers have a chance to go to the gym, so that's where they get it back in their own time. Gosh, so
if you work inside, I always say you get too used to it.
But for me, Wexford, that Dublin performance again, not to say I thought Wexford might be heading in a certain direction. Like, at the end of the league, you just didn't know. Two big wins at the end of the league, you don't really know what way they're going to go. The Dublin performance then, it leaves you with a big question mark over it. And look, you'd have to think that just on paper anyway, at least, that Galway have the players that, you know, if it just got into a straight shootout, Galway are a little bit more comfortable here than Wexford. So I'm going to say Galway by six. I'm going to say Galway by six.
Galway by six. So Murph is going Galway by six. I'm just noting this number, right?
Noted. Noted when I'm wrong next week and the Wexford fans jump in on top of me.
I'm going Galway by five. So I think we're both aligned. We're saying tip by two. And the last one,
I'm going to go tip by two.
And don't worry, we'll text Will and see, find out why he's...
And there's no awfully bias, this, as if there ever was, by the way. But we'll text Will. We'll text Will and ask him what his... just because he's a little bit unwell at the moment, feeling sick, doesn't mean he's not getting out of predictions, because we need to throw it back in his face. So that one, Galway-Wexford. Galway-Wexford Saturday. Yeah, here. We'll give him sympathy in the WhatsApp anyway, but we'll ask him for his permutations. But that's 3:15 Saturday, Galway and Wexford. That's an RTE. The other two games then, look, Antrim Dublin, Corrigan Park, that's at 4 o'clock in GA+. Kenny and Offaly then is at 6 o'clock in Nolan Park. Antrim Dublin, Antrim, look, good performance against Kilkenny the last day in terms of the first half. Like, you know, Davey was saying that it was one of the best performances in a while and that they had a few more goal chances, and if they got the goal chances, but to be honest, like, okay, they had a good performance in the first half, but then, you know, Kilkenny just kicked on, won the game by 18 points. Like, it is what it is, I think, at the end. And then when you look at Dublin, in fairness, like, Dublin performed well against Wexford. I know there's the dispute over the goal and all those different things, but, you know, Dublin just looked like that their stock is kind of rising in the right direction at the right time. It's a tough one for them, though, because, like, let's say if Dublin go in, and let's say Antrim do put the same performance they put in against Kilkenny in the first half against Dublin, and let's say very easily could find themselves up by 6 points at halftime. Like, Antrim are just capable of, like, even when if McNaughton gets a bit of traction, he's put up serious scores there during the league so far. If they get one or two runs on Dublin, and let's say go in at halftime, there is potential there. But at the moment, you'd have to imagine, considering how Dublin have started the Leinster Championship and the way they'll be looking at this in terms of this is a game that we'll be targeting for 2 points, I'd be leaning certainly towards Dublin. Antrim and Corrigan Park, again, we say it the whole time, it's a different beast than Antrim anywhere else. But I'm going to give Dublin the benefit of the doubt here, particularly in their performance against Wexford. You know, we're in a dogfight, came out the other side of it. Okay, there were certainly parts of it they won't be happy with, but I just think they're kind of headed in the right direction. Did it without Donal Burke as well, which is another point, yeah, which is important for them. Now, whether Donal Burke is back or not at the weekend, I'm not sure. I'm not sure the status of his injury or what the situation is. But I'd be saying here, I think Dublin, I'm going to say Dublin by 4 points, 4 or 5, because I do think that Antrim will put it up to him. I do think, again, that Corrigan Park element where they seem to perform will be there. But I do think Dublin will do enough to get over the line here, but wouldn't be surprised with an upset. But I'm happy enough to say Dublin, 4 points.
Yeah, Dublin, 4 points. So I'm looking at, like, if, you know, normally when teams go away to an underdog, right, so certain things have to go well for the underdog. Like, a lot of things have to go well, you could say. You could talk about referee, you could talk about weather conditions, you could talk about, you know, just the travelling team kind of falter into their normal expectations. But yeah, I think this game, would you believe, is coming at the perfect time for Dublin. Because they're coming off the back of two impressive performances. And I also noticed, as I said to you last week, Murph, I'm a big believer in body language. Dublin didn't overly celebrate when they bet Wexford last week. Do you know, have you noticed, yeah, that?
So when the game, I didn't notice it. No, go on.
If you come from an inferior position, right, and you you're kind of semi surprised with beating the team, you know, there's a huge celebration together, right. Whereas that day they didn't. It was like there was like a degree of expectancy in this. So I was saying, just Dublin actually fully believed, you know, and expected to win this game, which is a great sign of a team in an ascendancy. Yeah. So they're heading up north, right? And I think there's been enough, I suppose, issues for teams traveling up there in the past for them to know, we can't let this one slip, let's, right?
Yeah.
And so if you're going to go and take down a so-called inferior team, you have to execute. So now they've been forewarned, right? So if Dublin execute, I see Dublin winning here by 7 or 8.
Okay.
You know, like, I just haven't seen the evidence. Like, and I'm going back to the league campaign as well for Antrim. I just have seen no, like, collection of, you know, good hurling, good passages of play for a continued space of time over the game. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm open for a surprise. I will welcome it too. But I just can't see it. There's no evidence to suggest, right, there's a big massive performance coming here. And yes, the verbals that came out of Antrim last week, that's fine. They're just words. You know, just trying to paint a picture of where he believes things are at right now. I disagree. Personally speaking, I disagree. That is nowhere near the best performance the last couple of years. That's obvious, right?
Yeah.
So I just don't see it happening, to be honest. I think they're trying to make them believe that they're better than they are at the moment, whereas Dublin actually are better than what we believe they are. Does that make sense?
No, so, it makes sense. Yeah.
I can't see it.
And like the other thing, which I think you kind of touched on there, like, I mean, okay, Davey is saying one thing about Antrim, but like, I think where Niall O'Callaghan will be happy here is that Dublin are kind of quietly just tipping away there. Like, nobody is really saying anything about it. Like, they've been bolstered by the fact of, okay, the Nafina lads have come back a long time ago, but they've been bolstered by the fact that they've brought back a few lads who were on the panel over the last few years. We mentioned that last week, who have had a big impact. They've seemed to start to maybe just kind of, it's early under in his tenure, but nevertheless, they seem to have a bit of a style. They seem to know what they're going about. Granted, it's not perfect the whole time. And I think we spoke about Limerick earlier, that it maybe takes a year or two, a few years to get to Limerick's level, obviously, but in terms of implementing a style and actually have it ingrained in the team. But in fairness, in terms of a turnaround that Dublin could expect from a new manager, they do seem to be headed in the right direction in terms of getting that game plan over the line. They're quietly just tipping away in the background. Like, a lot of, I think at this stage, even last year, we were talking about Dublin in more of a, you know, where will Dublin be in 5 years' time if they're slipping? And I don't think that had anything to do with Micheál Donoghue. I really think there's a big part of this that Micheál Donoghue is one of the best managers in the country, no doubt about it. But Niall O'Callaghan coming in there from a Dublin, in terms of he's embedded in the Dublin club scene, he knows the Dublin club players. I think he knows a style of play that will suit them. For me, there just seems to be indications there that in terms of, I don't know what they think their best is going to be or where they're going to get. I think certainly in All-Ireland quarterfinals, where Dublin aim for at the moment is they go, listen, let's get to a quarterfinal. Like, we were there last year. There's no reason to believe we can't go back there at least again this year and see what happens from there. And if we get to there having built up a little bit of confidence, like, they'll aim to say, lads, we should be aiming to train in the Leinster Championship. Whether, you know, we're not the favourites, okay, fair enough. But why not aim for that? And the worst case scenario, you find yourself in a All-Ireland quarterfinal, having lost the Leinster final, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you maybe meet a team who's after coming through the back door. Confidence mightn't be up, depending on the draws, confidence mightn't be up, and you take a team and suddenly find yourself in an All-Ireland semi-final. For Dublin hurling, that'd be a huge step. Now, I know we're talking off down the road here, like, we're only into the early stages of the round robin in Leinster, but I think for Dublin at the moment, their preparation and where they're headed at the moment, they could very easily find themselves in an All-Ireland quarterfinal, having come under the radar while everybody else is talking about, you know, your Clares and your Waterfords and your whoever else. And they could just find themselves there in a good position, having maybe played a nice bit of good hurling over that time. And suddenly things look quite rosy and positive for Dublin. So I just think, look, again, I know that's down the line. That's none of that might happen. But I just think we're Dublin are at the moment. Could you turn around and say, well, I think whatever's going to happen at the end of this championship, I'm going to see Antrim in another in quarterfinal. I don't see that. And that's not being disparaging to Antrim. So when I add up those things, I say, well, where are those results going to come from? For me, those results are going to come from the likes of this going away to Antrim. I think Dublin go, listen, lads, we go there. We get 2 points on the board. They're another brilliant.
Antrim, yeah. If they beat Antrim on that 6 points, they're qualified. They're out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Out of the group. I mean, they've progressed.
Yeah. Yeah. They're out. Yeah.
And that'll be what? That'll be their third year in a row.
Yeah,
Clare beat them in 23. You know, Cork beat them in 24.
Cork beat them in 24,
Because Dublin won Burke Hinger in 23. Cork didn't, were just a better team, you could say, in 24. Dublin lower chances. Yeah. So this is a sign of growth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
While it's changing managers, I agree with you. All the while they're on the 20s and Leinster semi-final, minors are going fine. So, it's a positive outcome for Dublin. This is a game whereby, yes, they're moving out of Parnell Park. They're finished there now as we speak. So it's get the job done, and we're looking forward to the next stages.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good for Dublin. And again, Antrim, look, I just think at the moment, the jury's out kind of at the moment, a few bad performances. So look, again, we'll see what happens. Big performance for Antrim, keeping back Dublin from winning another 2 points. Look, we'll see what happens. But I mean, the indications look like it would be a Dublin win. Like I said, I'm going to go by 4 points. You said probably seven or eight.
Well, I feel like I can't see the gap closing that much more, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go Dublin by seven.
Okay,
which is a rarity, I think, because Dublin don't usually win by that much, regardless of who they play. In fairness, I'm not trying to be disparaging, as you say.
No,
but I just think that they're rising. The Dublin tide is rising at the moment.
Yeah, and that is the thing, though. Like, I mean, just to touch on the point you were talking about there, like you were saying, that's the thing of it's a thing kind of up between the ears where, like, if you're ahead by 3 or 4 points, can you make it seven? Like, that is a quality in a team. It's not you accidentally find yourself on seven or anything. Is it a thing where you see teams where they get to three or four and suddenly they're out on 7 points? Like, we can probably name the teams who we know are capable of doing that. But Dublin, it's probably a confidence thing. They probably haven't been in that position many times over the last few years. Yeah. So if, like, this is a great game for them to actually go and do that, become that team that suddenly becomes a two-score team where you're... So the team is looking at you going, we're two scores away. But yeah, so anyway, Antrim Dublin, 4 o'clock Saturday. And the last game then, I suppose this will be an interesting one, touching on the fact that the under-20s, again, knocked out this weekend. Kilkenny and Offaly, Nolan Park, 6 o'clock, same time as Clare and Tipperary. This one's not televised. But Kilkenny and Offaly, like, again, there's not too many eyes, I suppose, going to be on this game. That's no offence to Kilkenny or Offaly, speaking as a Kilkenny man, but I think when you have particularly Clare and Tipperary at a huge one in Munster at the time, but for Offaly in particular, like Kilkenny, again, we're just going to have to see Adrian Mullen injured, or where is the Adrian Mullen injury situation? Blanchfield again.
At the moment?
I think Derek Ling actually came out with an update to say that it wasn't as bad as they thought it was. Where it was
ankle or for calf? You say
ankle, roll the ankle. Yeah, bad roll the ankle. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, so he rolled the ankle again. David Blanchfield is the same. Blanchfield, I think you might remember the tackle. He actually collided with Fionnuala Mackesy. The two of them were going for a ball.
Yes, yeah.
They collided and rolled the ankle as well. So it'll be interesting to see where they are. But, like, I mean, Offaly at the moment, like, I'm going to give you first call on this one in terms of, well, not to say first call, but Offaly after the weekend that's in it, we mentioned it ourselves. Nobody else has, not to say no one else has, but it hasn't come out from the Offaly camp or anywhere I've seen it. I mean, it's obviously early days. They're after being knocked out in under 20. But the bit of fatigue, is it potentially there? Like, they're quite reliant on the under 20s. There's a lot of lads here after playing a lot of games. I would say if a fresh Offaly came against a fresh Kilkenny, I would still be thinking at the moment Kilkenny will be going beaten Offaly. But nevertheless, a full-strength Offaly where Screeny's going well, you know, Charlie Mitchell's going well, Killian Sampson, you have all the main key players, Dignan. It's just not there at the moment, I don't think. But, like, you would know more about the 20s, but where would you be seeing that? Like,
you know, I think, at the moment, I say Dignan and Kelly are getting an awful lot of plaudits because they're the two big men who's able to win primary ball. But it's a question of pace, right? So I'm obviously opposing the Offaly backs versus Kilkenny forwards and likewise up the far side. And I just see far more quality than the Kilkenny forwards versus the Offaly backs. I can't see it getting done.
Yeah.
So I just see the Kilkenny forwards taking Offaly backs to town. That's just reality, okay? Because what happens is, number two, the movement of Kilkenny versus their ability to retain ball, whether that be high or low, is very good. It's deception. I saw it firsthand in Nolan Park a couple of weeks ago. Excellent stuff. Whereas on the other side, Offaly's ability to do that under pressure from a Kilkenny defence line, I can't see it happening more. I just see Offaly having to direct route one ball. Even at this stage, I think they're probably looking at a sweeper.
Yeah.
I mean, so if you're bringing a sweeper into an international championship, you know, you're you're trying to, I suppose, you know, keep things to a certain level. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. In terms of beating. So, like, that's where it's all gets Galway, to be honest. But if even with a man down, you're questioning why they're playing with seven defenders. Like, what are they doing? They have to go. They have to go for it. And it's a question of quality at this stage, right? Kilkenny are just way further on in terms of quality player, personnel, you know, tactical, you name it, right? They're just further on. And this type of game for me, like, again, it's in Nolan Park. I'm talking 15, 16 points worth.
Do you reckon?
That's reality. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. I do because, like, teams have to have a spark when they go take on teams above them. You know, so, like, if you're in an awfully position and you're going to take on Kilkenny, you have to be going really well, ticking all the boxes and heading to that game with a spark, ready for a fight. That spark isn't there yet. So it was there throughout the league, don't get me wrong, but the landscape has changed in the last 3-4 weeks. It just has. You know what I mean? Yeah. The couple of losses they've had, it was a complimenting performance against Dublin, don't get me wrong, but that just got absolutely blew to shit.
Yeah,
you know, against Galway, and then what happens? Then you mix in a couple of injuries, and you're like, fuck, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we talk about momentum, but also momentum works in different ways, right? It works when you have a victory, but also when a team gets knocked out, and your flagship team,
gets
knocked out of a championship, they're expected to win. That can have a bit of a knock-on effect too on the players themselves. Maybe not the senior team, but on the players themselves. So that can be a tough bit of baggage to carry. So I just don't see the fluidity that what we've seen off it's early start of the year, and when the pace goes up. Pace in pitches, pace in personnel, and quality with it. You know, that's when there's the degrees of separation get wider and wider. So I'm going to say. So I think Kilkenny going to rattle 3 to 4 goals at least, right? I don't think after you get one, that gives me a 9-point situation straight away. I'm going to say Kilkenny by 15 more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'll.
Sorry, Will.
Well, Will isn't here to. To be fair to Will, I don't think. Will doesn't dress anything up. It's just part of the natural progression of where Offaly are. Like, I mean, a few years ago, Offaly weren't even in this position where they were competing at this level. You don't just suddenly return to it and start, you know, beating teams automatically. There obviously as well, there is this, I'm going to call it a bit of a transition phase where lads are coming from minor and 20. It's a step up. There's no other way of saying about it in terms of physicality, in terms of skill, in terms of strategy, tactics, everything. There is a step up. In fairness, like Offaly in the 1B league final, rallied well and came back against Waterford. And I think for a lot of Offaly people, they would have hoped that would have been there from the start nearly, instead of bringing it back to 4 points as it was. And then Waterford, in fairness, turning back on the burners and just creating that bit of space again. Like, there definitely is scope in this Offaly team over the next few years, and they will. They'll only get better. But maybe, like, this is just too early. And then when you couple that just with, like we said at the weekend, the 20s being knocked out, they've played a lot of games. The lads who are with the senior team have played a lot of games. And this is maybe just the attrition part of it getting into it now, where there's just too much overlap. And Kilkenny don't have to worry about that. Like, Kilkenny don't have that overlap.
Can I ask you more, right? Go back to what your point there about the Waterford League final. So, in your opinion, what got Waterford to that position, that big gap in score?
Well, I think, first of all, Waterford respected Offaly. I think they were going, listen, lads, these lads can be dangerous. Let's not get dragged into a dogfight. I think the pitch really suited them. I'm not going to say the pitch like suited Waterford more than Offaly. It allowed them to play their expensive game.
Expensive too, yeah.
Yeah. And for me then, just the Waterford players playing at a higher level over the last few years. Like, you know, they had more group, like you, let's just say the Ballygunner lads, for example. There's a group of players who have won Club All-Ireland, batch of lads there. In general, all these lads have played in, certainly not all of them, the vast majority have played in All-Ireland semi-finals. All of them have played in, I don't think there's many debutants this year for Waterford, have played in Munster Championship. They've played just at a higher level. And I think Offaly's exposure, and I don't think there's a lot of people who disagree with this, Offaly's exposure now, coupled with the fact that they actually do have the players, like, it's not like another team getting sent into Leinster to get a hammering. Offaly are now in the phase where they're being exposed to this new stimulus of, this is a higher level. I know people say it was the Leinster Championship. Yeah, but it's still a higher level. And the consistency of performing at that level, while also not relying on, you know, an overlap of a large group of players, because I don't think any county who wants to perform at a really high level can rely on that. And that's not, it's fantastic for Offaly. Like Will pointed out a few weeks ago, the amount of trophies Offaly have won over the last few years in hurling and football has been huge, but particularly in hurling, if we're concerned with it, it's been enormous. But the trade-off for that is the miles they're adding up in the clock. And when these players from a young age are trying to convert over into the adult level, there has to be a small bit of fatigue there. I'm going to call it fatigue, you know, and not every team can perform every year at 100% and, you know, not have injuries, etc. It's just
there's a betting in period too, like, you know, so they're coming up against a team now, let's say at the weekend, whereby Kilkenny have won, is it 5 Leinsters in Romich or Murph? Is it?
think so, yeah. Five in a row, yeah.
Back to your time. 2020 is your first one. 28, 21, 22, 23. Yeah, five wins in a row. So they're heading for 16. 20,
yeah. Yeah, 20, 21, 22,
so
23. 24,
we're talking
yeah.
about levels here. Like, we're talking about at that time, a lot of the group were playing back then as well. A team that's just at a very, very high level, heading for something bigger.
Mm.
You know, they're obviously looking beyond Leinster. Whereas I'd say, awfully, if they're looking at qualification Leinster, that would be a huge victory on their behalf this year.
Yeah.
Well, it's just level. That's why the margin of victory is so high. I'm not trying to be disrespectful and say
no.
It's just that it's just team situation at present. That's all it is.
Yeah, that's all it is. But well, look, we won't see that game. So we can only hope to see the highlights. Well, if we're recording this time next week, which we probably will be, we probably still will have not have seen it. Well, not this time next week, it'll be Sunday. We'll probably still not have seen it because the Sunday game won't have been played. But in fairness, good few games on the telly over next weekend. So we have...
I guess you're not going to Thomas, yeah.
A fair few games. No, sorry, I will go to it. But like, I mean, as a whole, we're not going to see it. Like, I'm talking about we as the hurling community.
Yeah.
I'm living 2 kilometres from Nolan Park.
2 kilometres?
Yeah, that's all I'll be from Nolan Park.
Oh, Jesus. You do so a handstand out there.
I'll have what am I looking at? Clare and Tipperary. So the GA Plus will be out for the Clare and Tipperary. So I'll be in the stand with the GA Plus and the
nice.
and watching the game live. So yeah, that'll be it. And hopefully Will be back on the mend, which is probably a nice little transition into finishing the pod tonight. For anyone who doesn't know, we have to now text Will and tell him stop recording us.
Yeah, Will has got a severe dose of diarrhea. So we couldn't bring him on the podcast where he'd be getting up and down every 2 minutes.
But so Will is actually somewhere in Tullamore Hospital. I think it's Tullamore he's in. He's in Tullamore Hospital. He's recorded this what would
in
you
an
call it? No, I'm not going to say in an ensuite. I don't know where he is, but he's recorded this, I'm going to say remotely, in that we were sitting here at the start. We probably should explain this at the start. Maybe we did. But we were sitting here talking away like the two boys and Unbelievables, and then suddenly recording comes into top corner. So like Will with no notification goes record the lads there now. Only for thankfully we copped it. And also I should notice halfway through this, I don't know if you saw it, I texted into the WhatsApp there. Microsoft started telling me we're about to give you an update here in 27 minutes. And I was looking at this, it was like Die Hard. I was like, what's gonna happen in 27 minutes? Is this whole thing gonna drop now, or are we gonna get through it? Yeah, so we got through it. And I'm just looking at a text from Will here. He said, they're already over an hour on the back of a weekend with just one game. There's a lengthy tangent about 90s hurling, and now Skettle expressing his worry about Galway. I've taught them well. Is he? I'm just wondering now. He's listening.
Yeah, he's
sorry,
listening.
Will. Will, yeah. I can now see 3 people online in the WhatsApp group. I didn't know, was he able to listen or what was he able to do? Never awfully biased. So actually, we'll just update. The messages that Will is sending us now, never awfully biased. He also, actually, in fairness, his predictions, he's gone for Clare. So Clare and Tipperary, we've gone 2-tip on Clare. Kilkenny, Dublin, Galway. Okay, so Clare is the bolter there. William, you're listening to us. You're like a ghost haunting the pod here.
Yeah.
we can't see him, but we know. And do you know the other thing is, I can see. So for people who don't know as well, and this is the big tangent we're going to finish on. When you go into WhatsApp now, our WhatsApp group says 3 online. So I know you're online, Skell, but I also know Will is also listening to us now.
From the toilet.
Look at this.
He's in.
This is actually the ghost of Will O'Callaghan. He's out of Texas. We finish there. Yeah, I think we'll finish there. We're happy enough, aren't we?
That's not his current picture either. I'd say right now he's probably stretched on a bed.
But sure, we'll be back next week.
That went fairly okay now.
That went okay. That was all right.
I won't lie to you. I was following your lead, and if you went off on a big tangent, I was going to follow you.
I've never focused so much on a podcast. Sometimes we're talking, and I know you're talking. It's not to be bad to you. I listen to everything you say. I'm sure you listen to everything I say. But sometimes you're talking there, and you go, geez, I'm going to check this up now. I want to see how many points Clare scored at the weekend from baseball. I want to check. Yeah. And you start throwing into the little Twitter box here. You have a look. Grand.
Yeah.
I was very aware tonight that we could not do that. I was terrified. So we're grand.
I think we did okay.
I'm
giving us a solid 8 out of 10 now.
I'll go with 8. I'm happy with that.
Now, we can't take too much applause because bear in mind, this is season 4, Murph, isn't it?
Season 4, I believe.
We've probably done about 100 podcasts.
Oh, handy. We're going to end up doing 55 this year. So
okay, by the looks of it. So let's go 200 podcasts.
We're not going to be far off 200.
And we were nervous about doing this by ourselves.
No, and that it wasn't live and that we could just cancel it. But anyway, we got through it.
There it is, folks. Join us next week.
Right. Sure, we'll talk to you later on anyway.
Paul Murphy, thank you.
James Cahill, thank you.
And Will, good lad. Get well soon, my friend.
Will, please cancel the recording now. I'll text you.
Cut. Boom.